Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of Bonnie plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all Bonnie 4.5-inch vegetable and herbs are on sale through May 17th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. In the dark, I fed my dream. Permaculture flows like sweet springs. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Creating the world like it's meant to be.
Welcome to episode 440 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prestitutes. Well, good to be here with y'all. Man, we've missed an episode, obviously, because we were out of town. And I didn't choose to make a public service announcement out of it, but I'll come to that here in a moment. This episode brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be this October 27th through the 31st, right there in, well, it's going to be right here in North Carolina. We got tickets that are not only going to be for the in-person thing, but also if you want to do it virtually. Barbara O'Neill's going to be there. She's going to be headlining. She's going to be speaking every single day at this five-day event. There's going to be a number of other backup dancers out there that are equally as awesome. And a lot of their, in fact, one of them we hung out with for the last week.
Yeah. Any one of the speakers, honestly, could headline a show themselves, especially like Logan Duvall from Sewing Prosperity. We hung out with him and he is squared away.
Man, I'm telling y'all, we spent a week with Logan and I'm telling you, the guy has got, you know, that's part of what we're trying to do is shine the light on a lot of these people that have moved the needle for us in a big, big way for not only me, but maybe my family and people that I know in a massive way. And nobody's ever heard of them. You know, it's not like it's a Dr. Peter McCullough or anything like that. But yeah, we'll come to that in a minute because, man, I just learned so much from Logan and realized that his mind as a thinker is far wider than anybody would ever realize. And you learn these kinds of things when you go on a trip with somebody. We'll come to that in a minute. But anyway, Sovereign Health Summit, yeah, go there, check that out. TPC will get you 5% off. And then also, we got Nessus Hemp. Got a link for that down below. Well, and also, if you go to the website, you just put in PERMA, and that will get you a discount. And there's a number of others out there. But folks, I'm doing this without notes right now. Usually, I have notes of who my advertisers are and all that good thing. And this show is going to be a little more, before we even get hopping and popping, I want to thank everybody that's here live tonight. I think we're going to be covering a whole lot of your questions regarding a lot of different things. I have been playing with my grandbaby as much as I could today. And the truth of it is, don't put it on the screen yet. Yeah. The truth of it is, I just didn't prep for this show like I ordinarily would. It doesn't mean it's going to be a lesser show. It just means that William and I discussed that, hey, we're going to talk about what we picked up in El Salvador. Why do we keep going down there? And a lot of people have a lot of questions. I can tell by your emails, and we're going to talk about hopefully some of that. I don't want to talk out of school. But anyway, son, how you doing?
Pretty good. Yeah, it's a. We just got back from El Salvador. It's a weird transitioning back to an unhealthy environment.
Man, ain't that something? I mean, speaking of which, it's funny he mentions that because all day today, from the time I got up. I mean, and that's crazy. An unhealthy environment when we live in the boonies, our nearest neighbor is about a quarter of a mile away. And you would think, oh, man, this is as good as it gets here. But folks, they are doing stuff from the sky. They're doing things through your Wi-Fi. They're doing things in every single thing around you. Frankly, the sky doesn't appear to be attacked right now with what some of the tech that we're employing.
Yeah. So I was in town earlier. Everywhere seems to be like variations of blue, kind of. Here, right here at the property, it's crystal clear blue. Once you start getting past, I noticed it whenever I went past Mars Hill, headed towards Weaverville. that's where it started getting hazy again. They had like scattered clouds, nothing crazy, but it was a hazy, it turned into a hazy blue going towards Weaverville.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that is we are testing a device right now that is supposed to clear up a lot of this junk. And folks, I'll be honest with you, I've been gone for a week and 2 days is what it is.
Yeah,
I'm doing like a long-term video of what this thing's done. You can ask my daughter-in-law, William's wife, the moment I put this thing in the ground and I had it off and run it, and I literally did it the day before we went off to El Salvador. I mean, it had just come in the mail. I just put it in the ground.
Oh, and I thought you had it in for a while.
No. Oh. Emily was out there in the driveway saying, look, y'all may think I'm crazy because they had scattered this stuff everywhere that day in the sky. She says, look, it looks like it's breaking apart like popcorn. It was overcast the last several days. She saw that. She was the one that pointed it out to me.
Told me this.
Yeah, well, yeah, 30 minutes later, you can ask her. She was out there saying, hey, look up there. She was out there playing with the baby in the driveway down the hill. She was probably the first one to notice it. And me being, you know, the skeptic that I am, especially when it comes to stuff like this, I'm like, you know, I looked up there. I'm like, whoa, hang on a minute. We had a previous device that we were talking about and it worked for about a week. Maybe if I'm charitable, I'd say a month, but it didn't even work that long. Anyway, folks, I'm not going to tell you what it is just yet. I know a lot of people are waiting with bated breath. This thing is not cheap. But if it is doing what they say it does in terms of the chemtrails, and judging by what I see right now, the last time the sky was this blue was for the 30 days following Hurricane Helene. That was it.
It's not cheap, but the effective range of it would justify like a community purchase. Like
that's a good point.
If you had some neighbors that were, I mean, it's rare to find these days, but if you could, like, if you had some neighbors that were, you know, everybody lived relatively close to each other. I mean, maybe the size of like Mars Hill close to each other, you could all invest into it and break these things up.
Well, this thing would easily cover a small town. Definitely.
Small town. Yeah, for sure.
This for the range on this thing, and folks, buy, look, I know everybody's waiting with bated breath, but I can't tell you that this thing works until I give it a good solid month and I'm looking at the sky every single day. But I'll tell you this much. Last 2 days, I have not seen blue like that since Hurricane Helene.
Well, the reason the time duration is important is that, and this was kind of explained to me from a guy at Mountain Readiness that I met at Mountain Readiness, and he does these, he's called one of those orgone gifters, I guess. So he takes these orgone, like hockey puck things, and he, you know, gifts them around wherever. I don't want to get too specific about it, but he said, like, he put it in a way that made sense. He's like, imagine somebody came and put a hole in your roof. You would notice that there's a hole in your roof. Same thing with these cloud busters and everything. Like, they notice that, hey, there's a hole here. We need to, like, adjust the towers, adjust the frequencies, and overcome this hole. And so that's why the duration part is important to make sure. Because there's a lot of cloud busters that work. It's just temporarily until they overcome that hole. And then, yeah, so hopefully this thing, like, actually makes it past that period.
Yeah, so that's how diabolical and insidious a world, a country we're living in right now, folks. I mean, it pains me to say, as a veteran, it pains me to say that this kind of stuff is going on right now, and I can't even, I mean, we are being attacked literally by our own government, and that's part of why we were in El Salvador, to be honest with you. That was, you know, just looking at a couple of things, you know, had a day and a half with Dr. Jack Cruz. I mean, people would give their left arm to be able to have that kind of opportunity to be around him and listen to what he has to say. We spent a day and a half with the man. I mean, I don't know how many people, I mean, he took us to his place. I mean, his place at the beach where it's a healing center.
Places, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and then showed us all around what's going on there. I mean, we spent a whole lot of time with the man. I mean, I couldn't even believe it, to be honest with you. We were there with him half of one day, and then he said, look, come back, be here 7 o'clock in the morning. So we were there, and that was totally unexpected. So it upended some of the other plans we had, but I'm like, okay, I'm not going to pass up an opportunity to spend a day with this guy and figure out what he's up to. And then we got some footage, and William's working on a video from that. But there was a whole lot going on there. You know, I know typically, folks, I mean, for the ones that are coming in right now, you may be thinking, okay, well, what's up with the structure of the show? Look, we'll still come to Eric's part of it right there. But I just want to kind of, first of all, I want to lead with that whole chemtrail buster today. I'll be honest with you. I have not seen blue like this since Hurricane Helene, and it was 30 days following. as if they give us a reprieve for, you know, the evil they did to us. Everybody else from 9/11 to you name it has had exactly the same experience with these so-called natural disasters.
Yeah.
There will be, and a number of them have actually emailed me and sent video or pictures of their sky immediately, whether it was California fires, whether it was the Palisades thing, you name it. Every time it's like there's a period of time thereafter there's no spraying of the sky.
Yeah.
But I have not seen the sky like this for a while. So
here's some nice weather to deal with your disaster cleanup.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's some nice weather. You know, sorry we murdered everybody out there. So I'm curious if anybody else has seen that phenomenon as well. A lot of people don't pay attention, but I am looking every single day. Anyway, this, like I said, this thing is not inexpensive. And before I tell everybody, or not expensive, or I'm sorry. No.
It's expensive. That's what we're trying to say.
Yeah.
Costs a lot of money.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of money. But man, if it means my little grandbaby down there ain't breathing in poison, my wife, who was coughing every single day, no longer is.
I've heard her cough once since we got back.
Yeah. And usually, folks, it is an all day thing. It has been tearing my heart out when you see the woman you love in here dealing with. She's already as tough as, I mean, she is as tough as they come without a doubt. But every single day, you know that it's not because she's a smoker or doing anything else. She's in phenomenal shape. I mean, find me another person half her age that can do what she does.
Yeah, she just did a 26-mile rut for time.
With 40 pounds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, find me, most guys can't even do that. So this woman's as hard as woodpecker lips. But I'm here to tell you, man, you see her walking around here every day, just cough, cough, cough. Can't sleep at night, cough, cough, cough. And now all of a sudden, none of that's happening. I mean, it's like an intermittent cough here and there, but it is like, usually you hear it all day long. Now that's not happening. I know there's a lot of folks that are saying, tell me, but I'd be responsible to get around. I'll have the guy who's responsible for it on the show here before long. But I told him, look, I'm going to need some time to test this thing out properly before I'm not going to be in that position again where I tell folks, hey, this thing seems to be working. And next thing you know, it's a month later and it ain't.
Yeah.
So I'm not playing that game. So we're going to make sure.
Or it has just satanic symbolism in it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we can't have that. Yeah, we can't have that. So, like I said, during the show, we're probably going to cover a number of your questions out there. And folks, I will say, well, just right off the bat, let's just cover this leaving the country. I don't know what they're telling you in the mainstream news right now, especially for the people that are watching Fox, MSNBC. So was that airport a ghost town on the way out, or was it just me?
It was odd because it was like when we left, yeah, it was a ghost town. But on the way back, like coming back, both flights that we had were full. And that doesn't make sense to me, at least. Like if you would think, if one's going to be full, you would think the other one's going to be full too. But yeah, going out, pretty empty, but coming back was full. Our first flight going out was empty, leaving Asheville. That one was pretty empty, but coming back was full.
But even... And oh my goodness, y'all, I ain't even gonna lie. Getting in El Salvador, pretty easy.
Yeah.
Coming back home, if you fly into Atlanta, look, somebody's easily offended. You might want to change the channel right now because I'm about to get real.
You wearing the shirt?
I wish I was. I wish I was wearing the shirt right now. I talked about it the last time we did. As soon as we got in there, it's kind of later in the evening. William and I get in there, and son, what is the first thing you see?
Boarding the plane, first of all, every third black dude in Atlanta is gay. I don't know what's going on with that, but that's the case. That's how the math is mathing out there. I don't know what's in the water. I don't know what's going on. And it's just the black guys. Like, I didn't see one gay white dude the whole time.
You didn't see no white employees there the whole time. There was 99% black working at this neighborhood. You'd see three of them huddled together. And this fit every negative stereotype about black folks you ever wanted to see. I mean, am I lying?
No.
You had three of them standing there. You're supposed to be directing traffic, and they're yelling half the time. What did that lady tell you?
She was like, I asked, her only job is to yell at us this one sentence. And I asked for clarification because coming from El Salvador,
you got to go through customs.
You have to go through customs, and everybody that, you know, we interacted with before that was like, make sure you get your bag in Atlanta. Make sure you get your bag in Atlanta. So I'm paranoid about leaving the bag in Atlanta, and I don't even know when I'm supposed to get the bag in Atlanta. So the lady's like, she's yelling something like, you need to go this or you need to go this way. And we're walking and the signs aren't matching what they're saying. That's the only reason I went back and I asked her. I was like, hey, we have a checked bag. Where do we go get that? And she's like, I just said you need to go down this way. I'm like, oh, how dare I ask for clarification when you what you're saying doesn't match the signs that we're supposed to be following. And she had like what she was really mad about was that A, she had to do any kind of work, but also I interrupted her
conversation
with an employee. Every person that had a job that required one person or just a speaker, like it could have been a pre-recorded message that they just placed right there and done the job. Everybody, there were at least 2 to 3 people standing around. One of them is yelling something. The other two are having a conversation around them. Like there was more like one person jobs occupied by 3 people that I've ever seen in my life.
Look, I mean, people are not going to like what I'm going to say, but since when do I care about that? It was like to get a job at the Atlanta airport. They're like hiring only knuckle dragon hood rats. Knuckle dragon hood rats only, you know, they're the only ones allowed to apply. Yeah, I said it. And I'm probably going to say some more too. I mean, I can't imagine a person getting into this country and the first experience they have coming into this country are these hood rats in Atlanta. I had a friend. I mean, my oldest best friend quite literally called me. He was coming back. He said they do a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
They had gotten back from Amsterdam and they purposely spent hundreds of more dollars to avoid the hood rats in Atlanta. They spent hundreds more dollars. Sound this weird. Let me straighten that out a little bit.
There you go.
They spent hundreds more dollars to fly into another airport to avoid those knuckle dragon hood rats in Atlanta. Yeah, I said it, and I don't care who's offended by it. Imagine, I mean, you're just coming in from name whatever country. You always wanted to see the USA. And this is the first exposure you get there. These hood rats yelling at you. They're gathered in threes. They're sitting there laughing, joking, totally unprofessional. You try to go through customs where they actually check your bag, which they seem to love to hit me every single time. They check your bag. They tell you to put your passport in the bag, which is the total opposite of what you do when you're coming in someplace. They want to see your passport. So it's counterintuitive. You're like, man, this makes no sense. Are you sure I need to put this thing in the bag? Yeah. Now put your shoes in there. Okay. Anything else? Yeah, put your belt in there. Anything else? Put your wallet in there. I'm like, can you just tell me this all at once? Or here's an idea. While everybody's waiting in these lines, put a sign up that actually says what it's supposed to say. I have never seen a more unprofessional operation than I've seen at the Atlanta airport. I don't care who cares. I know I'm going to get nasty letters. Keep them to yourself. Look, I mean, if it was up to me, and I was doing a hiring there, right at the bottom of that application, be no niggas allowed. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, no knuckle dragging niggas allowed for this job. And yes, I don't care who's offended. That's exactly what I put on the application. And the first time I see you acting up or acting like a fool out here, you're on the first thing smoking. You're going right back to the unemployment line. Folks, it is embarrassing. It is embarrassing as a person that's part black. It is embarrassing for me to go through there and I'm thinking, oh my goodness. And I'm seeing all these people around me. But anyway, that's exactly.
So the baby just learned a new word, I'm sure. And that's going to be fun when she repeats it because she's down there playing.
But I doubt she heard that.
This is I guarantee you she heard that. She only hears the things that she ain't supposed to repeat. But back to Eden Garden, Maryland says, when I was a church choir director in Atlanta area, the joke was, how many straight choir directors in Atlanta does it take to change a light bulb? Answer is both of us.
Oh, man, that was a good one right there. Folks, I know this. I know we talk about permaculture, preparedness, practical living and everything, but it's also social things that go on right now.
Yeah, practical living. Don't fly out of Atlanta. In fact, just avoid Atlanta. There's no redeeming qualities in Atlanta.
Not at that airport. Traffic
is a nightmare. People drive like complete morons. People drive better in third world countries than they do in Atlanta. And the airport is a freaking nightmare. And they have the governor over the intercom like saying,
the mayor.
Oh, The mayor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have the mayor over the intercom saying, oh, we have the world's most efficient airport. Who's lying on those? And, oh, also, when you were getting your bag checked for that salt, they were trying to make sure it ain't meth or something. I was you know, just waiting. I was checking where our gate was and stuff like that. And over off to the corner, they have like this award table for, they call it the Blue Glove Award, like for the TSA people and stuff like that, which it just seems odd that, you know, they'd call it the Blue Glove Award. Like they get awards for how many cavity searches they do or something like that. But right next to it is the like survey table where you have a box and you put in your survey. All the papers were gone. There was nothing that you could go in there and like write down and submit into that box.
Really?
Yeah, it was gone.
Well,
like,
you know,
either they ran out of complaints or they're like, all right, we got to remove this.
Well,
we're about to all get fired.
My best friend, he said that was part of it. It's like they get off on trying to make you late to your next flight. And there were other women over there. She was like desperate. Like, and all that they're going through my bag as I'm coming through customs. They don't even have the stuff they need. Okay, we're going to have to wait. Wait for what? I don't have any wipes. What kind of wipes? Explosive wipes. I'm like, okay, what do we got to do to get this ball rolling? I mean, good thing we had like a 3-hour layover, but there was another girl in front of me. She was sweating bullets because she had somewhere to be. And that was why my friend I was just talking about a minute ago, his name is Dion, by the way, he said he will spend hundreds of more dollars to avoid Atlanta altogether. I've never seen, and look, I'll change this up the topic here in a minute, but look, to the audience out there, if there is any possible way to avoid flying out of Atlanta, you're going to thank yourself. Just take my word for it because, well, flying into Atlanta, maybe flying out ain't so bad because you don't just have to avoid. Hit any customs.
Just don't go. Just don't go to Atlanta. Spend the extra money. It's worth it. Go somewhere else. Just don't fly out of Atlanta. Everybody boycott Atlanta. Airport.
Yeah, definitely that airport. I mean, wow. Can't even believe I'm spending that much time talking about this, but yeah. And then the whole slave training on the way out of this country, you can. This is why I leave so much earlier to the airport, because they want to do that iris scan. Folks, you may or may not, you can opt out of that.
Yeah.
And all they do, you say, I opt out, take off, because I'm wearing my blue light blockers in there. Well, take off your glasses. I turn off. He looks at the passport like I'm somebody else. Okay. And then you go through there. And then that naked body scanner, yeah, go ahead and you walk through that thing if you want to. Nuh-uh. You're going to pad me down. And I don't care how long it takes. You know, they would get rid of them altogether like they did at that time when they first came out with it, when they had that bogus shoe bomber thing. And then Chertoff made a fortune because he owns all those naked body scanners. Nobody on Fox News ever told you about that? Yeah, that's who owned those naked body scanners. So he was making a fortune out of that. And all of a sudden, I remember Alex Jones said, hey, everybody on this day, go for the opt-out. Everybody did it, and they shut down the naked body scanners. All they did were the metal detectors.
Yeah, which seems to work for every other country.
Work for El Salvador.
Also, TSA's not stopped anybody. They have never prevented anything from happening.
99% of the baggage that you check is never gone through a scanner. So, I mean, you tell me that makes sense. This tells you right there that this is security theater. It's slave training is what it is. And, you know, everybody wonders why people are looking for other options in other places. To come back in El Salvador, there was no naked body scanner. No. And by the way, that is Kentucky. Every one of those TSA agents that's working around that thing, get your affairs in order. I'm dead serious. That thing is, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not being hyperbolic. If you knew what that thing actually did, you wouldn't be anywhere near it. And you certainly wouldn't be going through it. You're getting hit with enough radar and you know, EMF and everything else just in the act of flying alone.
Yeah.
On an airplane where you're in a capsule, you know, there's a lot of injuries that are happening to you when you're doing that alone. I'm not trying to add to any of it. But anyway, you can opt out of all that. Just give yourself some extra time. We did. And, you know, it works out.
Leaving Atlanta Airport. When we were trying to board the flight, the guy, only supposed to have apparently two bags. I had a backpack and then I had like a small suitcase that I was carrying around. One I was going to put in the overhead bin. The backpack was small enough I could just fit under the seat in front of me. And I also had like a fanny pack that never came off my body. Like it negatively affects nobody. It takes up, I took up less space than the dude I was sitting next to, even if it was like, if I had it on. And as I'm walking through, the guy was like, you can only have two bags. And I'm like, I'm going to wear this the whole time. And he's like, you need to put that one in another bag or else I'll check a bag. And I'm like, it was just constant. It was just a power trip. And he tried to say it was some FFA rule or law.
You flew the whole time with that thing.
I flew the entire time with no problems. Nobody mentioning anything. It's basically a piece of clothing. Like if I had a hoodie pocket filled to the brim with stuff. He wouldn't have said anything about that. But like, it was a fanny pack, and it was like a crossbody type fanny pack. Wasn't going to take it off. So as soon as I got back on the plane, I just took it right back out, put it on. Nobody said anything again. It's these constant small little power trips. All right, anybody who's seen Friday After Next, Day-Day and whenever Day-Day and what's his name?
Craig.
You know, when Day-Day and Craig get that security job, and then Day-Day's all hopped up on this and calls himself top flight security, that's every TSA agent in Atlanta.
Yeah.
All of them think they're top flight security.
So here we go. I'll change the topic at this point, but look, in case you missed it earlier, I'll say it again in case you think I have any regret. You know what? If I'm running things at the Atlanta airport, which I never would be, the only way you're going to straighten out the problem there is on the application. We have a policy of a no hood rat, knuckle dragon, swamp running niggas on this airport. None of y'all are allowed to work here. That's exactly what would be on the application. You didn't hear what I said? Back it up. Yeah, I actually said it. And I don't
ambulance.
Care.
Say ambulance.
Ambulance.
Ambulance. That's the test. Instead of, if they say ambulance, they're fired. They ain't getting the job.
No. I mean, technically, I mean, I know somebody's going to look. I don't even care. I'm so sick and tired. What did you tell me the thing was? I mean, I'm so sick and tired of everybody having a kowtow because of the color of a person's skin. What about Martin Luther King said, you know, it's the content of your character. Act like you got a little bit of dignity. Act like you got a little bit of sense. I mean, yelling and yes, a bossing and slapping each other on the back and acting up and acting like a bunch of fools in the middle of an airport is the most embarrassing display I've ever seen in my life. So, yeah, I just killed half this show talking about it. Anyway, in a nutshell, avoid Atlanta Airport at all costs. All right. With that said.
El Salvador.
So, get down there.
Whoa, hold on. Before we move on to another thing with Atlanta Airport.
Oh, come on, Sam.
One more thing. All right, the check bag. One thing that you are for sure not supposed to bring from one country to another one is fruit. No? Okay.
No. Right. We might have allegedly brought some stuff in on a check bag. Allegedly.
What they for sure did was dump everything out of that check bag, like my toiletry bags and stuff like that. They somehow got dirt into the bag and ransacked the bag. Didn't find allegedly anything else in there that they're allegedly looking for, but they ransacked the bag. So it makes you wonder, like, what were they even doing in this bag other than just looking for something valuable to take, or like just looking for just ransacking for the sake of doing it?
Well,
they allegedly had to move stuff out of the way to ransack. And yeah,
son, I would invest in a new toothbrush.
Oh,
that's yeah. I would not be using that toothbrush ever again, because you never know.
That's good.
I mean, one of these fools might have nut rubbed it, man. You don't know what happened. Anyway. Yeah. So anyway, we'll talk about El Salvador. So what was the reason for going down there? It was multifaceted, and some of it, I don't know to what extent we can talk about it right now because there's so many things in flux. But yeah, there have been some overtures made to us about, you know, helping out with some projects down there or spearheading the projects down there. And you know, you got to get boots on the ground for some of that stuff out there. And it would be cool. It would be cool. When you see what's happening right here in the United States of Amnesia, whether it's the Atlanta airport, you see a place like El Salvador, which, you know, was the most deadly country this side of the world, you know, just a handful of years ago. Now
they have in the world.
Huh?
Wasn't it in
the world? It might have been running for the deadliest country in the world. Now there hasn't been a homicide in like 1,000 days.
You can't say that about Mars Hill. You can't say that about DCAB. Like since we've lived in that house, there have been like 3 homicides.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying when you have a whole country like that, I mean, yeah, there's some palpable PTSD that's going on there, and you can feel it. You can see it by every single residence. I don't care how humble. They have fence around there, man. These people are like sappers. They know that you got to have an obstacle. It has to be guarded, and it must be overseen. And, boy, it's like they got this stuff right out of the sapper handbook.
Sometimes the fence costs more than what they're defending.
Most times.
Yeah, yeah.
Most times.
Yeah. Because sometimes it's not even a fence. Sometimes it's like a full-blown wall. Like,
yeah.
Every single one of the fences has at least barbed wire on top or Constantino wire. Some of them are made out of like the, what's that, metal roofing?
Corrugated
steel. Sometimes they're made out of cinder block, and it's the entire property that's covered by this wall.
So part of it going down there, when you see this You know, there's some people that are, they don't have a middle class, y'all. And you got to be a little patient. But you know what? If you were to look at the trajectory of America right now, I don't think you need to have some Harvard historian to tell you that we seem to be doing in 250 years what it took the Romans 2 millennia to do. At the same time, you see this country that in no time flat seems to be on an upward trajectory where everybody just is taking a big sigh of relief. It's going to take a while for them to get over the PTSD. But honestly, there's some good things down there. But one of the things that they are sorely in need of is farmers.
Yeah,
I mean, legit permaculture farmers. The farming they're doing, this is what happens when 50 years of communism overtakes you.
Even average farming. Like, it, not even, like, they would benefit from, like some cattle ranchers from, like, Texas. Not necessarily doing cattle, but they would benefit from just people producing food however they can produce food. Because really, the only thing that they're producing right now is, A, the fruit that just drops from the sky. Like, we had a squirrel throw a mango at us. They got some crackhead looking squirrels down there too. They're kind of fun, but you have the benefit of like hijacking a pre-built food forest there. But other than that, sugarcane, and that's really the only crops that they produce out there.
Well, they got other crops, but sugarcane is, you know, is the sugarcane lobby down there runs a whole lot of things, and they hit all the lower country. Well, that's all it's used for. It's spray, spray, spray. They're doing everything wrong, just like we are here in America. You know, you can't be critical of that down there, you know, because that's exactly what we do here. And in the higher country,
they just got out of communism where they didn't have an option. And before, until recently, they had to pay, what was it, $250 per crop they were producing, which like flies right in the face of doing any kind of polyculture or like setting up an ecosystem producing food. So like if you're broke and you're a farmer and you're trying to produce something, chances are you're only going to be able to save up to produce one crop. And I think it's per year. So per year you produce like sugarcane, you got to pay $250 to be able to even produce that sugarcane.
Well, here's a conundrum they find themselves in, is that the problem is El Salvador once upon a time used to be a net exporter of food. Now they import just about everything. And I mean just about everything. If you go to a regular restaurant and you think you're getting a steak, I got news for you. It's like some kind of pressed meat. I don't know what that was.
When you cut into your steak, it didn't even cook like it was steak.
No, really. It was like, it was meat fibers, but you're like, I know meat. This ain't it. So, and they make it kind of look like a ribeye. They got it in the shape of, a ribeye.
Okay.
Until you cut into that thing, you're like, no, this thing ain't legit. But the problem is, now I'm talking about the problem, man. We're going to talk about what potential solutions are. So the problem is they import nearly everything from the surrounding countries, whether it's Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and, you know, other places. Well, they had a 3-day strike in Guatemala that nearly had part of the country.
No, it was longer.
Okay.
Kicked in 3 days.
Okay.
Into it. Yeah.
So they had a strike where the truckers weren't bringing anything across the border. And all of a sudden you have people in El Salvador like, whoa, what's going on here, man? You know, they don't have any food. So the government, under the Bukele government, as I understand it, said, okay, we just identified a major problem. We have got serious problems here that we are way too reliant on everybody else to give us food. And it shouldn't even be that way. With the kind of soil they have there, it shouldn't be that way. But when you've been dealing under communism for this long, this is what happens under communism, folks. For any moron out there that thinks communism is a great idea, this is exactly what it leads to in every single place.
They would argue that it hasn't been done right.
Yeah, every single time. It hasn't been done right. Yeah. The only way that works is if you don't have a single selfish person, especially in leadership. Yeah, go find me that. Anyway, they got a bind. They're in a bind down there right now. And I think some of the people, some of the expats, some of the people that are wanting to talk to us, they realize it. And everybody, whether rich or poor, you're all shopping at the same place for the most part, unless you're going to their version of a farmer's market. And even then, the pickings are slim. It's not fantastic.
The farmer's market consists of, from what I think, some meat being produced from like Beef Back Better. And then I think a lot of the other farmer's market is literally just stuff that anybody has access to just walking into the forest. And it's not like you got to be good at identifying food.
No.
Or like plant identification to find food out there. Like, there's literally, like, it's easy to find the mango tree. It's easy to find the avocado tree. It's now there are That being said, there are some plants that may or may not be food that we just don't know of because they have low, they're not very shelf stable. So there's so much doggone food just in that forest.
And alongside the road, I mean, yeah. There are mangoes everywhere, bananas everywhere, plantains, you name it, it is there. Lemons, but not lemons, limes, you name it, it is all right there for the taking. But you know, if your staple, I mean, your storage crops, beans, rice, a lot of what they eat down there,
it should be like yams and tubers and yeah. things like that, because perennial yams would take off. Taro would take off. Cassava would take off. Like, these are things that would just blow up down there.
But they're importing rice and beans yeah. from everywhere else.
That being said, those rice and beans are off the hook.
Yeah,
they like combine them. They like kind of mince up the rice and then they mix it with the black beans. It is off the hook.
It works. Yes. It works. It definitely works. And then pupusas down there. I'm not joking, yeah. y'all. You could take a family. I think I was telling Ben Holler in a conversation I was talking to him recently. You could feed his whole family for under $20.
Easy.
Everybody, yeah. I mean, walking out fat, full.
So you, me, and Logan, we're driving to, like, we're going headed towards Metapan from.
I don't even know where it was, man, at this point.
Okay, so let me back up a little bit. Typically, you would think, just from being in the United States, coast runs north to south. That's just what I automatically think. Coast runs north to south, unless I'm on an island. El Salvador, the coast runs east to west, and that will confuse you like nobody's business. But we're driving from wherever we were to Metapan, and we had to go up and past the mountains first. I mean, we were starving by the time we got to the top of the mountains, especially Logan. Shout out to Logan, but he needs his food.
First and second breakfast.
Yeah, we were trying to eat like hobbits, but we ended up fasting quite a bit. But we went to this mountain village we're driving past, and we saw a sign that said like pupusas. It said desayuno, which I thought was a meal at first. I think Dad tried to order that.
No, I knew it. That meant breakfast. Yeah,
Did
I knew you? That. Yeah, I knew that meant breakfast.
Okay, well, and we'll get to that in a minute, the Spanish part. But yeah, we stopped there. We walk in and they notice that we don't speak even any kind of Spanish, and they just give us like three pupusas each plus their little cabbage dish.
They got tired of us trying to translate what yeah. we wanted, and they just brought food. They yeah. just said, look, man, eat this.
They were nice about it, but they knew while we were there, and they knew we couldn't communicate while we were there. But we eat the breakfast, and then we're like trying to figure out how to ask for more. And then I think the lady said, like, we're out. And I translated like, more of anything, please. Like, so she came back with some eggs, some of the best avocado I've ever had in my life. Some beans, which they could have just given me a plate full of those beans and I'd have been happy. So we had breakfast. Three of us had breakfast, two helpings, plus the headache of having to deal with this. They charged us $12.
$12.
$12.
$12.
Yeah.
For enough food that would have fed the average El Salvadorian, I mean, probably a couple of days.
Right.
Yeah. yeah.
But that's like, also why we're a foot taller than everybody, too. So yeah.
So you hand them, I mean, boy, they're like, can't wait for these guys to come back when you hand them a 20. But the thing about it is that there's going to be a lot of mismatches when you deal with communism. I mean, if you're seeing a moral to the story here, that's right there. Communism does not work. This system we have, you know, people comes down on China and other places like it. But we got, in our country, we have capitalist communists, but in China they have communist capitalists. So yeah. I mean, which one works better, I don't know. But the point being is that down there they got a food system that is kind of on the brink if there were any major disruptions down there. So what does that mean for people like us? Well, everybody's moving down there, but it's usually Bitcoin millionaires or people that are into Bitcoin. Very few people have any understanding of building trades. You know, that's both of our background. They have no understanding of farming. That's both of our background, especially, you know, permaculture farming. And William spent a lot of time in the tropics in Australia. So he has that under his belt as well. So we're back there looking at a bunch of different things for a bunch of different. And trust me, I made some pretty big contacts down there. And, you know, Jack Cruz, we spent 2 days or actually a day and a half with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about what he has in mind for certain things down there as well. If you don't know who Dr. Jack Cruz is, folks, you definitely want to get acquainted with him like yesterday.
More than that, though, you need to get acquainted with Logan Duvall from Sowing Prosperity. Yes. Like that dude, I mean, everybody, like no matter what your healing issue is or whatever your sickness is or whatever, you need to get in contact with Logan. Because one thing that Logan, his superpower is being able to break down complex topics and explain them simply. Like, there wasn't anything that he explained to us that I didn't understand through his explanation.
Right.
It's, and then also, like, in regards to Bitcoin as well, like, he answered some questions that I had in regards to Bitcoin. But as far as the, so everybody check him out, Sowing Prosperity. He's awesome. And also just fun to be around.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great, great disposition. Yeah. Now, you don't want to get, let the guy get hungry.
Nope.
Which we kind of made a mistake. We went up to one part where it was at a high altitude. We actually did our live there, the last video. That's where we were. And I won't talk about that again, but there was so much more going on there that we didn't even know about. But leaving there, met with James from Beef Back Better, and you know, got to hang out with him and had the best coffee I ever had in my life at the specialty coffee shop there.
The coffee is insane.
Well, the coffee and the cocoa was harvested right there in the country, and they put them both. They made, they mixed them together, like the cocoa nibs. They put them in there in the cup, and they made like a, I don't know,
like, kind of like a mocha, but it, instead of like all every mocha that you get here in the United States, it's not some fake chocolate syrup that they put in the coffee. Like, this was a legit. Awesome.
100% coffee.
70%.
No, I'm saying they actually sell 100%.
Oh, chocolate bars. Yeah.
Chocolate.
They have 100% chocolate bars. But what they did was, like, they put the cocoa nibs in the bottom of the cup. They poured it. They poured a, well, I think they call it pull. They pulled a shot of espresso, and then they did their little latte art on top. And it was off the hook.
I didn't want to look like a hog, but I was like already caffeinated at that point. I almost went back and got another one.
But the coffee there, like, so if Dad drinks coffee in the United States, he's going to drive everybody crazy. If I drink coffee in the United States, I have, like, it feels like somebody's stabbing me in the stomach. That's probably the most, in that week that we were there, there's probably, I probably drank more coffee there than I had 3 months prior.
Even the gas station coffee didn't mess with me.
All the coffee there is off the hook. It's kind of actually like Australia, where, like, no matter where you go in Australia, like, even if you go and get gas station coffee in Australia, everybody's got a, like, a, an espresso machine. They don't play around with their coffee, but this is higher quality coffee. This was off.
This right there, boots on the ground. Well, folks, I mean, I know. Oh, what happened?
This is from King, because this was actually a topic of discussion question. Do you know if Puerto Rico is a good option for country living? Any good places there?
Okay, I'm going to answer this one kind of genteelly. Jack Cruz has already covered this. Dr. Jack Cruz, neurosurgeon, the whole nine yards. I'm going to loosely, and folks, I mean, I don't mean to talk out of school or anything, but I'm going to kind of say what he said in other podcasts when asked about it. And he got into more detail with us. A lot of what we talked about with Dr. Cruz was off the record. So folks, I will not betray. If anybody talks to me off the record, I will not betray it. Just keep in mind. So I don't care. There's going to be people sending emails like, just tell me. No, look, if I gave my word, I ain't telling nobody. So anyway, there was stuff we talked about that will remain off the record. But what you have right now, according to the swarm data, is that you have this South Atlantic anomaly. And it used to be off the coast of Brazil, but it's been moving. And then also, according to these people, the pole is shifting. The North Pole is moving from Canada over to Siberia, and it's in there. It's in Siberia right now. And honestly, the magnetism is screwed up in a lot of different places that ordinarily would be absolutely perfect. Puerto Rico being one of them, because it was one of the places we considered as well. You would think at a 13 latitude, I believe is what it is. At a 13 degree latitude, it should be absolutely perfect. But keep in mind, you got Fort Buchanan at Puerto Rico, EMFs out the wazoo, probably covering the whole island. And then in addition to that, you have what some think are an underwater base down there in Puerto Rico as well. Long story short is that the magnetism is non-existent in Puerto Rico, and people are coming down right now with diseases in that place that ordinarily they wouldn't have. Now, if you want a better understanding, Dr. Cruz has talked about this. It's better if you're a member, because he's telling you things in that forum that you're not going to get anywhere else. But honestly,
he has a Patreon,
go to jackcruz.com, and then you're going to find out that he has like a, you know, a membership that you can be a part of where you can get specific questions asked. You may not like how he answers them, but you know, he will offer you something. So anyway, long and short on Puerto Rico, it's one of the areas where people were kind of asking me to check out. It is not at all on the radar, not even a little bit, because of the magnetism. Jack Cruz, in a nutshell, light, water, magnetism. nobody's ever really talked about magnetism. And to my knowledge, I think I was the first one that ever interviewed him that he talked about that he led with magnetism. When I told him I felt like a Superman down there, that I'm running sprints up and down the beach and that my wife no longer needs her reading glasses, I didn't even get the question out. And he's breaking out a picture on his phone of a magnet picking up beach sand.
Yeah.
Son, you did it how many times with the beach sand?
I did it at a couple different locations. But the one that was the best was that black sand beach. And it wasn't like I didn't have a very strong magnet. It's just like I don't have it on me, but it's just a flashlight that has a magnetic base on it. And I was just tapping it into the soil. And that one beach, I don't know which beach it was, but it was a black sand and it was very magnetic.
Well, try the black sand that me and your mom was at.
Yeah.
And it's on a whole different level. But the point being is that wherever you are right now, folks, go out there with a magnet. Try to get up some of that soil where you are. See if any of it will stick to a magnet. I mean, even the volcanic rock dust that I pay money for is not even in, I don't know. I mean, it is not even in the ballpark with the stuff that comes that we were getting from El Salvador.
I was tempted to get a Ziploc bag full of that sand.
Yeah. this stuff is on a whole different level when it comes to the magnetism. Well, that's the part of the equation going back to Puerto Rico, not only Puerto Rico, but he's talking about all these other places out there. And what he says, and this is his assessment, is that there are only a handful of places that you want to be with the magnetism being what it is. And then when you add it, I mean, it's only insult to injury when you're adding in the other things that you're doing. The Wi-Fi, the 5G, the stuff they're dropping from the sky, all those things are they're only making a bad problem even worse. And the government knows this.
There's a no-go on Florida too.
Well, at least the east side of Florida.
Yeah.
The east side of Florida, I think, is a no-go. He thinks the west side, I think that's what he said, that the west side, it might be okay.
It's an hour away from each other. How is that the case?
No, well, no.
It's like 2 hours.
That's what he was talking about. You base some of this based on the fishermen out there and what report they're giving. Folks, I don't want to talk out of school. I mean, you're going to really have to go there and check. Listen to the interview that he recently did with Dr. Alexis Cowan. And, yeah, I think you're going to have a better understanding of what he's talking about. Now, it seems like a dire situation for a whole lot of people about that are out there. How soon will it happen? I don't know. And then honestly, the questions I'm asking, I don't know if he is, but he has the empirical, he already had the data and then went on two world cruises to check out boots on the ground to find out which is smart to do. You know, just because the government comes out with data, I don't care what government it is. Just because they come up with that data doesn't mean it's accurate. So he took this world cruise to go find out whether or not the data would overlay with what he was finding out. And that's exactly to his opinion and assessment. Yeah, they're having problems in places like Brazil that they didn't have before. And it might be a result of this South Atlantic anomaly moving and also the pole moving. So anyway, one of the safe spots is going to be places like, parts of Honduras and Guatemala and all of El Salvador. And there's some other places as well. How far this thing goes up and how much of a problem it might be, I don't know. This is not my area of expertise. But at the end of the day, if all this stuff goes by the wayside, what good is being in a really good magnetic environment where nobody knows how to grow food? You dig? Yeah. Okay, hey, you're starting to see why we were there.
A millennial kitchen says no spraying was made illegal in Florida. So the same thing with Tennessee. The issue, though, is that they make it illegal at an altitude, up to an altitude that they don't spray at. So they it's like saying you can't wear. It's like telling a blood gang member, hey, you can't commit any crimes while wearing blue. They don't wear blue to begin with. It doesn't really change anything. That's what they've been doing. And then King was also saying Jack is not a biblical cosmology believer. He is believing in a globe Earth, which is a conversation that we've been having.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily make his conclusions wrong. So I would be careful about throwing out the baby with the bathwater. In regards to the magnetism. Now, have I empirically checked it out? Apparently, the regular everyday person can't do this. Supposedly, it has to be done with swarm satellites. Had he not done the boots on the ground work, I would be, if it were just the government saying this is what happened,
yeah,
then I would take it with a grain of salt, and I would almost certainly be more inclined to believe the opposite. And, but the fact that his evidence is correlating with their data tells you that maybe, and honestly, there's some other things that he got into that are really powerful, but I think that was set off the record, so I don't want to get into it. But I tend to believe that he may be right regarding some of what's going on with this magnetism.
Just from our experience of being there.
Yeah.
Like, it was 3 hours in, and I sent a text to my wife saying, like, you know, this place is awesome. I didn't know how bad I felt on a day-to-day basis until going there, and I felt like Superman there. We didn't do anything like super laborious or anything that required a whole lot of effort, but like my hair and my nails grew much faster. Like I have this toenail fungus that started receding. There were just, it was thing after thing that just kept getting better. It's like you find out, oh, this is what it's like when my body is functioning 100%, just without any supplements. Like the only thing I was taking in was salt and water and eating like crap. Pupusas ain't the best for you. And I was on a straight up pupusa and burrito diet.
Yeah.
And random fruit we found.
Yeah. I mean, same here. I was just, because there were so many times we were appointment after appointment after appointment with all these folks down there. And truth of it is, I mean, we spent so much time renting. I didn't even get in the ocean, which is insane. I mean, I put my feet, bare feet on the beach a couple of times, but never got my whole body into the ocean the entire time there.
I was the only got underwater.
Yeah,
and that was Jack Cruz's pool.
Yeah. Yeah. So we never, folks, that's how much we were moving there. And we were doing so much of it that we wouldn't, a couple of times, I think we fasted like at least 24 hours or more both days.
Yeah.
Where we were going at 100 miles an hour the whole time that we just didn't even get a chance to eat anything. So it was like a whirlwind tour. But folks, that's part of what we were doing down there is scouting out some of this stuff. But the number one problem that most people, in El Salvador, at least all the expats, they're going down there because of Bitcoin. They're going down there because of freedom. But I didn't hear a single, by and large, most of the people you meet, preparedness doesn't even, it never even enters their mind.
A lot of the people there are Bitcoiners. Like a lot of the expats that are there are Bitcoiners that are looking to consume from an alternative market. None of them are looking to really produce, from what we are experienced so far, none of them are really looking to produce anything as far as like for the community or make the community any better. They just like want to go there and heal for themselves and then just consume from an alternative market. David Zimmerman, I saw you in the chat earlier. You got to check it out, dude. I did a consultation for him a while back, and he's very aware of Dr. Jack Cruz's work and everything. But yeah, dude, you gotta check it out.
But also, there is the the healing. Just being in that environment is just feels healing. And honestly, maybe it might not be in the worst interest in the world of me, spending. Honestly, folks, the thing that has me a little bit worried. My wife and I went down there for 2 weeks the last time. Inside of a week and a half, my wife threw away her reading glasses, didn't need them anymore. And all the stuff I was dealing with, okay, man, as soon as I got in the water, everything was cool. We come back 2 weeks later. This is what concerned Logan is how quickly it came back. In 2 weeks, usually when somebody goes down there and they get things straightened out, they come back and it takes a while for it to get screwed up again. It was 2 weeks later. She had to put them right back on. 2 weeks later, I'm going right back to what I was dealing with. And I'm, folks, if there's anybody that has a more fastidious diet and protocol following all that stuff, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to. And I do it. I mean, I'm beating people around me over the head like, hey, put those blue light blockers on, or hey, let's get out here. Look at this sun in the morning, whatever. I'm doing everything right. And I'm still having problems. So, that's exactly part of the reason why I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe it might not be a bad idea to have a plan B down there. Just in case. I mean, they need farmers in a big way down there. And frankly, it is every bit of farming that I saw down there personally with my own two eyes was dismal.
Yeah.
Dismal. Anybody that had a cow there, dismal. I ain't saying there ain't somebody doing it right. I just didn't see it.
Yeah. No, I guess the best like regenerative ag that we could see was people like tying up a goat along roadsides and stuff. Like that was kind of the most we'd see. King, now just to reiterate this point, King was saying, I need Michelle's protocol for healing the eyes. Wasn't it just being down there?
No. Well, here's what the protocol was. And this is according to Jack Cruz. Get up as the sun's coming up over the horizon. You need to be out there bare feet on the ground, preferably in the beach. and looking directly at the sun. And you look at it, we were out there looking at it every morning for an hour or two. All those healing, all that healing red light, and this is where Logan can explain this to make it make more sense. In a nutshell, that red light that you're getting from the sun, there's nothing comparable to it. They make red light beds and stuff like that, but honestly, at the end of the day, like Jack says, there is no alternative. So you get down there, you're looking at this thing, maybe an hour. I would do it while I was jogging on the beach. So I'm jogging and looking at the sun, hitting stuff every once in a while, or running into a place where I didn't intend. I mean, you're looking at it for, depending on your health concern, it could be 15 minutes, it could be 2 hours. So that's what it was. And then also when the sun goes down, you need to go down with it. You need to make sure you have these blue light blockers on. You can't be playing around on your phone. You want to have that red setting that gets rid of all, but it doesn't get rid of all the blue. It just gets rid of most of it. So even with them, if you have to mess with your phone after hours, you want to make sure it's on that red setting and you want to be using blue light blockers. And then when you get back to the place, that melanopsin is all over your entire body, including your skin. So you're sending a mismatch signal. That's why the people that go out there and wear these sunglasses, it makes my skin crawl knowing what I know right now. You wonder why you're having problems. Your eyes are taking in a certain message and your skin is taking in a very different message. So if you're wearing sunglasses out there, the polar lenses that a so-called doctor told me to wear, you're taking that in and you're not getting real sunlight into your eyes and your skin is taking in something and every other part of your body is taking in something else. What does that tell you? You got a problem. You got a big, big problem, and it's going to create confusion in your body. So long story short, that's what we did out there. And So inside of a week and a half, our eyes were good.
Didn't we have something from Eric?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. With that, hey, we'll hit your questions here in a second. But with that, we're going to go to my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, what are we fighting for? Being in a city and around people constantly, it's hard not to sympathize with the demon elite who are trying to kill most of the population. At my lowest moments, I can have thoughts wondering what the point of trying to save a world of people that seem to not care at all. But then I go into my garden and realize it's not about these people. It's why the first ethic of permaculture is care for the earth, not care for useless eaters. The default result of practicing permaculture is a healthy, abundant planet for everyone. Creating local, resilient community is as self-serving as it gets. None of us will survive alone. So I just let the negative thoughts pass through and realize, what else would I be doing? In an ideal permaculture world, I'd just be putzing around my garden, not buzzing around like a blowfly, desperately trying to get systems up and running for the inevitable crash. But if I didn't enjoy the work and find purpose in the action, I'd have given up long ago. If you don't enjoy the work, then don't bother. You won't last. There is a reason both Bill Mollison and Jeff Lawton say dogged persistence is the most important trait to success. If you can't handle metaphorically getting kicked in the balls regularly, this life is not for you. But if you can't imagine any other life than facilitating life-rich systems through permaculture design, then welcome aboard the SS Permaculture. Well, we'd be happy to have you. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. If you're in need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of this pimp cast, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information on my permaculture community group in Sacramento, California, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there. And by the way, we dropped off a couple of Eric's shirts over to Dr. Cruz and his wife. Don't worry, you'll see it in the video that'll come out that William's working on here before too long. So yeah, we dropped off a couple of shirts over there. And but Eric, man, he's making a really good point. And it's like I said, we never coordinate these things, but he's right there on the spot. I mean, nobody in this country, honestly, is going to care until they're being practically shoveled into their graves. So there's a lot of good opportunity. Real quick, son, on the one right there. As far as I said, so I've been sun gazing throughout regularly and I must be consistent. Yeah, that's what he says. If there's not one other thing you should do, never miss a sunrise for the rest of your life. And like I said, you're looking directly at it. If you can't, you got problems. Don't worry, you can fix it. If you can't look directly at it, look off to the side as long as you can bear it. And then, you know, when you give it some time and do everything else right, and you'll be shocked before you're looking directly at it.
Yeah, it's, you just got to be consistent with it. There was something mentioned about Comfrey. I can't find the comment again, but anyways, sorry.
Yeah, somebody says, I'm glad you're discussing biblical cosmology with, no, I didn't discuss it with him.
No.
no, I didn't discuss it with him. And I don't with most people. You know, in fact, I mean, does anybody have any proof whether one way or the other? No, not really. Nobody has. I do know this. I mean, I could sit here. I got to be really careful because I could seriously upend the whole intent of this podcast if I would. At the end of the day, I could see entirely too far. Way, way, way too far.
The proof is in their own math.
Well, let's not get into all that today, but yeah, it's, we'll have to talk about it another time because I could easily go down this rabbit hole. Bottom line is, Eric said it right there. I mean, this, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking a little bit ago, you know, this world wouldn't be in such a snarl if Marx had been Groucho instead of Karl, if you dig. And right now, El Salvador is figuring out that when you go through three civil wars in 50 years and you're living under freaking communism and, you know, everybody and every element all the way up the chain is completely corrupt, all the judges, everybody else. Huh, sound familiar to you right now? Sound why we don't know anything more. Supposedly dropped the Kennedy files out there, but we still don't know. We can't get a hold of Lee Harvey Oswald's tax records. But you Trump, you're telling me you dropped the,
yeah,
you can't get his tax records still because you're going to find out he was working for the CIA and the FBI. That's why you're not getting it.
We found out there's a child trafficker who trafficked children to nobody, apparently.
Yeah, and a woman who's in jail, supposedly. I don't even think she's in there. And, you know, all this just happened. And strangely, you have a country that couldn't care less.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, Jack Cruz kind of ties in a lot of what's going on. Like he had said before, if you're surrounded by a bunch of morons, you might want to check the magnetism of that place.
Yeah.
So that's something to consider. But yeah, when you get down to brass tacks on all this, folks, I don't mean to be so nebulous, but honestly, I can't betray the confidence of certain people out there. But honestly, look, I'm going to be straight with y'all. And are we looking at a plan B elsewhere? Absolutely. Are we leaving tomorrow? No. Are we leaving at all? I don't know. I mean, honestly, this thing is moving. The unraveling of this country is happening at a pace that is really mind-boggling. It's happening at a pace that is, I mean, you can't get anybody to actually care. These Trump tards, and that's exactly what you are. If you can sit here and see all this, the dude just came out the other day and said, I'm not concerned at all about the plight of Americans. I'm worried about Iran and having nuclear weapons. What, your own DNI said they didn't have any. You got the story that just came out, hit hot off the presses, of Tulsi Gabbard's office being raided by the CIA to come get back the documents that she was supposed to release regarding, what was it, Kennedy, Martin Luther King, RFK, and 9/11. We ain't even going to talk about 9/11. All that stuff. They came in there, got those documents, and it just hit the streets, and still nobody cares. We find out that wealthy pedophiles are literally eating children, and still nobody cares. We find out that they are quite literally dumping poison on us every single day, and still nobody cares.
We don't even know the extent of the poison that they're dropping on us, because that testing that Doc Will did a while back was only what he could think of off the top of his head. It wasn't like a full-blown panel of every possible thing. It was just what he could think of. And everything that he thought of was supposed to come out of zero. Nothing came out of zero.
Yeah, yeah. And then Barbara, you know, points out other things we didn't even really get into. It was like MK Ultra. I mean, it is crazy. Steve's asking, how's the cartel activity in El Salvador? Non-existent. Yeah. Safest country probably in the world right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are no mafiosos running out there. And be honest with you, the guys they nabbed and put into their prison called CECOT down there, they were going to get them anyway because these idiots got tattoos all over their faces.
Yeah.
And
it's like they were signs, basically.
They told us about one guy who murdered 800 people all by himself. I mean, this is just one dude. So, and he's locked up, and you figure they'd just go ahead and put him in front of a firing squad, man. But, yeah.
No, go ahead and put him in CCOT where there's 80 beds and 100 men.
Well, I mean, I don't know what that whole situation looks like, but honestly, anybody that tells you that, well, I'm not going to get into whether or not America's the best country in the world or whether it isn't. I'll leave that up to you to decide. But folks, I wouldn't be on trips like this, you know, 2 months removed from one another if I believe that, because I've been fighting this battle for as long as he's been alive. He grew up being, you know, he grew up going to protests and whatever else. I've been fighting for freedom for 30 years, whether on terrestrial radio, in, you know, whether it was on the job site, it didn't even matter. I would talk freedom with every and anybody that would ever listen. And now we've hit a point of critical mass where just by and large, nobody cares. So as far as what we're looking for down there, we are in fact looking and seeing what the options look like. And honestly, if anybody else is out there is interested, they're needing farmers probably more than anything else.
And don't feel like you got to get good at it before you go down there either. Like that is there's a reason that there's so many permaculture demonstration sites or permaculture schools in the tropics, like especially in Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, things like that. There's all these brand new permaculture design students that go to the tropics, and then they basically like piggyback off of the pre-built food forest that either the Mayans, Aztecs, whoever built for them. And they claim it as like, hey, this is an example of permaculture design. It is a good example of permaculture design, just not your permaculture design. So if you're not, even if you're not good at it yet, or you're still learning things like that, like keep in mind that, you know, the soil is delicate there. If you think of the tropics, 90% of the life is above the soil, 10% is in the soil. If you go to an arid environment, 90% of the life is below the soil, 10% is above the soil. So the soil in an arid environment is way more, or temperate environment is way more resilient than a tropical forest is. But if you just keep that in mind, and keep in mind that you're going to have to add like biology and biochar, so that way the microbes don't just wash down during the rainy season, keep that in mind. It is going to be hard to fail. I mean, if you just focus on, I need to house microbes and give them a permanent home in the soil, focus on that, you can't fail there. Like, it's going to be very difficult to fail there. And then just like observations of nature, just pay attention to what you're doing down there. So don't feel like you need to be, you know, perfect at every aspect of permaculture before you go down there. If you go down there just realizing like, hey, there's going to be a bit of a learning process, you're going to be good to go. You're going to be good to go.
Yeah. So let me hit another. Bill Zegley says no mafia running down there, but I heard there were some pimps down there. Yeah, you got that right. We were definitely, you know, just walking around. It was, I really like Santa Ana as far as I'm never going to be a city guy.
I like Metapan too.
Yeah. I liked all those towns. I mean, they're really, really nice. And to King's point here, he says, would a blonde haired, blue eyed person be safe to, not only could a blonde haired, blue eyed person look,
that was blonde hair for my daughter.
Well, there were blonde haired, blue eyed European women walking around in thongs. I mean, they were safe, 100% safe. Nobody is tripping out there, y'all folks. I am telling you, it is about as safe. I've never felt as safe in any American city as I did anywhere in the whole country. No matter the city, there was one time where a stranger picked us up and walked us all the way back to his,
Yeah, we thought it was about to go down for a second. Yeah, we were in Metapan. Logan walked back to the truck because he forgot something. I think it was his phone, maybe. He walked back to his truck. Oh, and this brings me to a point that I forgot to bring up earlier. He walks back to the truck to get his phone or wallet or whatever it is, and some guy comes up to him. He's like, caliente. And Logan is like, yes, which is the beginning and end of his Spanish. Yes, in English is the beginning and end of his Spanish. And he's like, oh, you speak English. And Logan is like, yes. And turns out this guy, he's from El Salvador. He has a plumbing company. And I think it's just plumbing company in California. And but he's from El Salvador. His parents live in El Salvador. And he also owns this restaurant in El Salvador. Like Logan tells him, yeah, we're looking for some food. He's like, oh, I'll bring you to a place. I got a place up here. So we're walking, we're following him through these cities.
We already told all that. So oh, in that last one, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, I was the translator and I speak no Spanish.
Bottom line is that the people are very, very helpful. I mean, you're going to get along just fine. Nobody is, look, the concerns you have, if you're worried about here in the States, y'all, I'm telling you, you could probably walk around there naked and not have a problem.
It's, and the guy who tried to feed us for free.
Yeah. It was his restaurant and he was going to feed us for free.
Yeah.
And he didn't even want the money. We insisted on paying him. But yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's the kind of people you run across. And these are humble people that will go out of their way to, I mean, there's a lot of that still exists here, but yeah, anybody considering looking down there, hopefully as time moves on, we'll talk more about what we could be potentially doing down there. And some people I got a feeling might be very interested, especially when you're looking at a lot of the crazy stuff that's going on here and with this South Atlantic anomaly, and nobody seems to care about it. And according to Jack Cruz, the Midwest, places like Texas, Kansas, Nebraska, you know, basically through the middle of the country, it's going to be the worst.
And the heat. Okay. So in Texas, the heat is, I mean, obviously you have hot, humid heat and you have hot, or you have humid heat and you have dry heat. But the heat in Texas feels like it is cooking you. It feels like you're in a microwave. It's cooking you from the inside out. Like you feel the heat to your core. You would think it would be similar in a very, like the humid tropics, like El Salvador, but it's not. It's all surface level. It's all very, like, it's very tolerable. Like we were there arguably in like the worst feeling month, right?
Yeah.
That transition period between the dry season into the wet season. So it's like highly humid. There's no rain. It's like that transition month into the rainy season. And it was all very tolerable. Like I, not once there was I like thinking that, oh, this is unbearable.
No, not once. I mean, I've been way hotter in North Carolina, the low country in North Carolina, in Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma. I mean, I've been way hotter in those other places than I ever was down there, because guess what? They don't have a whole lot of geoengineering going along, and they're not cooking you from the sky. You know, those moguls you see in the sky, those, yeah, that's microwaves.
With a quilt pattern.
Yeah. They're Kentucky frying you every time you turn around. So, yeah, you need a passport. That's because of your own government. And let's see who else had a question in here. So, Heather asks, are you guys moving down there? Not tomorrow. Maybe not ever. I mean, it, you know, you never know. I mean, I'm down there looking what the options are, because I honestly believe this country is on. When you have pedophiles that are running the country and nobody cares, you ask me where you think that leads. So I'm definitely looking for options.
David Zimmerman was asking, how is the expat community?
We didn't really meet a whole lot of them, but I mean, the ones we did interact with, they were good people. I didn't have a problem. I mean, they're definitely pleasant. Yeah. Are they looking to be as productive as I would be in an environment like that? Not even close. Not most of them.
And Lydia, you keep saying we care. You do. You care because you're obviously watching the Pimpcast, but the majority of the United States does not care about what's going on. I'm glad you do. And everybody here does to some extent. And also back to David Zimmerman's point, like if we were to go down there, our goal would be trying to integrate into the local populace, not try to stay separate in an expat community. We ain't trying to do what the Nazis did down in Venezuela and create our own communities or anything.
No, it would be, you know, the number one complaint to the people that live in these places where everybody from New York and California are going right now is that you don't assimilate. You go in there, you bring the same bad ideas that made you leave California and New York. You go to places all over Texas right now, and then you bring the same idiotic, asinine thoughts that made you leave that high tax environment you were in, and then you do it over again. This is the kind of retardation that I really want nothing to do with. There's a whole lot good going on down there. As far as the expat community, I met a lot of great people. I'm sure not everybody's wonderful. I met a lot of great people, and we'll see just where that goes and where it might lead.
Bobby Spag said, what would it take to move all of one's stuff down there? Air, sea? Honestly, like I was kind of talking about this with my wife, like what would we take and what would we just like replace there? And I think we would purge.
I think he's asking for cost.
Oh, okay. Well, this would lower your costs. We would purge, honestly, like about 70% of the stuff that we own before, if we were to go down there. We would purge a lot of it. Now, somebody's going to think about guns, like asking about guns and stuff. You can take those. You just got to take a class. Like, you can get guns there that you can't get in the United States easier there than you can in the United States. But it's basically like you got three levels of classes for three separate like classes of guns. So you got handguns, and then you got shotguns and rifles, and then you got another one for like belt fed machine guns. So yeah, you can be armed. I think it's concealed carry only. You can't open carry. But one thing that we did notice is that all the police that were like carrying around weapons, they all got chrome weapons. All of them.
Yeah, they all look like Kansas City pimps. Yeah. I mean, they got like, I mean, they didn't have pearl handles or anything like that. But yeah, these guys, they want you to see them. And that's part of the protect and serve model that they have down there. It's not intimidating. It's like, okay, for example, look at a police car in the United States of Amnesia in most towns, okay? It's black, it's pimped out, it's meant to look tactical. Look at a police car in most other countries. They're loud, obnoxious, because they are meant to protect and serve, okay? That's the kind of stuff that we have going on here compared to there. But as far as cost, Bobby, I can't tell you what that cost is, but I know that they will allow, I think, a shipping container, no tax, no nothing. You can bring in two vehicles, although it might make better sense. I'll take my Tundra and my Tacoma, probably sell them here, go down there, check this out. Jack Cruz is driving around in this 4x4 diesel.
JAC is the brand.
JAC. It's just like a Tacoma, almost exactly like a Tacoma, fully loaded for like 20 G's. What's that scaled down Toyota you can get down there?
Hilux.
You can get one of those for like 10 G's. And you can't break them if you wanted to. There's no planned obsolescence in a Toyota.
Emily just showed me a Nissan Titan that's like 3 years old. That's for sale. Like, I think 30 some thousand miles on it. And they're asking for like, it's either 12 or 17,000. It's something ridiculous. You can buy, like, I can sell my busted down F-350, 2001 F-350 for 10 grand here in the United States. You can buy phenomenal vehicle in El Salvador for that same price.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and don't bring your F-350 down there. You're going to struggle.
Yeah.
You need a small like Tacoma. You maybe get away with the Titan or a Tundra, but yeah, you need something smaller.
But regarding cost on what it takes, I haven't even looked into any of that. I'm just trying to see if it's even a fit or a possibility or whatever the case may be. You got four growing seasons. You're never going to be cold. And honestly, there are people, you know, kind of reaching out to me right now. I've reached out to some people. There have been some people out there reaching out with some pretty unbelievable deals out here to work in some sort of partnership. Hey, whenever it's something like that, if it's a partnership, if I'm working with a person that knows zero about farming, I got to be calling all the shots.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of options out here and a whole lot of things that could or could not work out or maybe the worst thing in the world. So I'm looking at every single option out there. I know one thing, food. If you starve to death, you could drop any one of us out here in the middle of those jungles wearing wet weather boots and a machete, and I could eat indefinitely.
One of those European G-string bikinis. Yeah,
you could eat indefinitely out there. I'm not even joking. Yeah, I mean, fat is the hardest thing to find in nature. I mean, fat is quite literally the hardest thing to find in nature, but in the tropics, every other tree is a doggone avocado.
You have avocado, Brazil nut, cashew,
yeah,
all that type of stuff. Now, so, David Zimmerman is saying you should put a group of 10 together and explore. We would be down to go. Now,
well, if anybody's interested, maybe, you know, we can consider something like that. I don't yet know. Who was it? Let's see. Would Americans have to pay taxes? Their taxes is a fraction. You spend half that year, they get 50% of your money here if you participate in that system. There, I think they get 30%. But here's the other thing. Once you own your land, you own it. You don't pay taxes on your land or food. You don't pay any of that. And honestly, if you're growing your own food, how much do you think you're even? I don't understand why anybody is spending money for food at all when it would be so incredibly easy.
Just
well, like, with what we know anyway.
I mean, down there, like what you could really, I mean, you could easily produce a lot of your own food. Really, the only thing you'd be purchasing is maybe like salt, for example, or some, and even then you could go make it yourself with the ocean being right there, or some like unique items that you might, you know, like creature comfort type things. Like a, let's say you wanted ice cream, for example, you might go buy that, but you can produce the majority of your food. And y'all, you will not get tired of those beans, those frijoles down there. Yeah.
Yeah. You won't get tired of any of that, but really it honestly, as an expat, folks, I kid you not, it is cheaper to eat out every single meal in a day than it is to go shopping up here. Son, am I lying?
Oh yeah. I went to the store earlier and about cried. Like what I spent at the store for just 2 to 3 bags would feed like me, Emily, and the baby a month.
I can get a stack of pupusas out there with anything I want in them. I got the jalapeno and the cheese. $1 a piece. And honestly, to fill up the average person is going to be about 2 or 3 of them. We're talking $2. Yeah. And that's the gringo price. You go to one of them places like we went up in the mountains.
25.
It might have been 25 or 50 cents. You can buy a whole fish for 25 cents, 50 cents if they clean it for you. I mean, yeah, you can. It is cheaper to eat out at every single meal there. If you had a family of 5, this is no exaggeration, a family of 5 could easily eat out. I mean, even at that real fancy place that we went to with Dr. Cruz.
We went to a fancy restaurant, and it's like part of this boat club marina thing. I think the most expensive thing on the menu was
$21.
$21, and that was like a stacked seafood risotto. Like I had ceviche that was far less than $20. I think it was like $9 or something like that. Logan had like a bowl of ceviche. I mean, but also keep in mind, seafood is going to be cheaper than beef there because they import 90% of their beef. So seafood is by far.
Which they got right there. I mean, it's right there at the marina. The fishermen are dropping it off right there. So, I mean, man, I had a whole ecosystem up in that risotto of everything that came from the ocean.
Yeah.
And Dr. Cruz is like, man, I thought you wanted seafood. I said, it's all in there.
Yeah.
It's in there.
You had an ecosystem in that risotto.
Yeah, man, I had it all.
Big old bowl.
Yeah, and it was probably some of the best risotto I think it was the best risotto I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And anyway, that was $21. That was like the most expensive thing on the menu.
And now Heather brings up a good point. What do people do for work and wages? Bring a job with you. But it's easy to start a business, like especially if you come from a construction background, or even like if you speak Spanish and you speak English, you could have a job before you get there, just helping us Americans out. That would be it. Like just being a translator and a guide, you would be busy the entire time.
If you're used to being an employee, it may not be such a wonderful time for you, unless you got one of those remote jobs you can do on the road. If you got something like that, yeah, you can make it work. But if you're, I'm a person that all, you know, everything I do, man, it's working with my hands or my brain, or usually both, or whether it's my trade. You know, if I wanted to go down there and do electric work, I mean, I'm a journeyman electrician for 30 years. I could go down there, easily make a killing on, you know, serving the other expats around there, because there's record numbers of them. And honestly, some of the work I've seen, the electric work I've seen, is very suspect. It is not at all cool. Now, that's me being a little nitpicky as a union electrician up here that was trained.
No, it's sketchy.
It's no matter where you are, dude. Sketchy. When I'm walking up the sidewalk, bro, and I see blue Smurf tubes sticking up through the concrete.
We saw a dude cleaning power lines with a machete.
Oh man. I mean, yeah, there's some sketchy stuff out there, but yeah, you'll have to,
Heather Grannon says her husband has always wanted his own business and he's a master electrician and HVAC contract. Go.
Yeah. If he wanted down there, I mean, HVAC. Yeah. I think if you're able to do any of that stuff down there, I think you would probably, I mean, don't ask me to show you the ropes down there because I don't know the place that well. What I'm looking to do, honestly, what I'm considering in a nutshell is trying to make a demonstration site down there that would serve everybody. Yeah. That would serve everybody, where people could come and, first of all, you know, where it's producing tons and tons of food, maybe food that they don't know that they can produce down there, and then have any and everybody who's interested come by there and train, because what they are looking for is a bunch of decentralized farmers that are really getting it done, whether it's on an acre or whether it's on 10 acres or 150 acres, it doesn't matter. These things are scalable, and not a whole lot of people are doing them. And frankly, I think a lot of that may have been lost through 50 years of communism. Yeah. So, yeah, as far as, look, I know there's a lot of other questions here, but we really ought to get going here. Anything else to add, son?
It's just, don't believe the crap you've heard about El Salvador of like, oh, it's like, it's not violent anymore. There's more opportunity there. Like, there's a huge vacuum of jobs that are needed, of businesses that are needed. Like, this is what America was back in the day, whenever all these people are coming in from Europe and all these other countries for the, it's the new land of opportunity, really, is what it seemed like.
Yeah. It seems like that in so many ways. And, you know, can you see opportunities like this in Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, possibly? I mean, you know, I'm not limited to one thing, but I know that there's a reason why a number of people are courting us there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They know our freedom construct. They don't want just some person that's just going to go down there and do the same tired things here. There's an interest in us in particular because they know how we are all about the freedom side of things. And if that's not, look, if I got to live as a slave, if I can't live free, or at least my idea of it, then I don't care what else is going on. And right now, this country is no longer free. So we're looking at other options. Do we have time? I don't know. Is it going to work out? I don't know. But like that, like Bilbo said at the end of The Hobbit, you know what? I think I may be just about ready for another vacation, another adventure. That's right. Who knows? Maybe I am. I'm not. Well, either way, y'all, hopefully we'll get this thing worked out. We'll let you know with it as we find out more. But anyway, until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
From the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life, for the magic's alive.